Hello and welcome to Staff Picks, the podcast for movie nerds by movie nerds. As always, I'm Mario Lanza, and I am your host on our journey through the movies out there that just need a little more love. And today's movie is one that I have been dying to do for a couple of years. In fact, I was going to do it last year for Horror Month, but the problem is it's not really a horror movie. It's one of the most unique movies I have ever seen. I'm not entirely sure how to classify it. We are talking, of course, about the 2017 movie One Cut of the Dead out of Japan, a Japanese zombie movie, kind of a horror comedy, I guess, would be the best way to describe it. And again, this is one of those movies, the minute I saw it, I'm like, I gotta talk about that movie one day, because this is one that maybe the most repeatable viewing movie I've ever seen, where you watch it and you instantly want to watch it again. It just is designed specifically that way. It's also a fun little puzzle box of a movie. It's kind of done backwards. It's not the movie you think it's going to be when it starts. So I'm really excited to talk about this one. And for my guest for this episode, let's see, she's been on the show before. I always have her on to talk about some horror movie. I know she did Ginger Snaps, but I forget the last one she did, she'll tell me. But she's a horror author, personal friend of mine. Her name is Fiona Carter, but she goes by Fiona TJ Tichinel. I believe that's correct. So welcome back to Staff Picks, Fiona.
Fiona J.R. Tichinel when it's a pen name.
Oh, where did I get TJ from?
I don't know. But yes, I've been here before, and we did Ginger Snaps, we did Unfriended, we did Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, you're a four-timer now. I thought you were just a three-timer. Oh, okay.
I thought I was earlier today, too, and then I remembered, oh, we did Rosemary's Baby, didn't we?
That's right, yeah. People, go back and listen to that episode. That Rosemary's Baby one was the one I remember being especially fun.
Yeah, it was great.
Okay, so I will let you introduce yourself since I already screwed up your pen name. Please describe yourself, ma'am, and describe what you do for a living.
Okay, I'm Fiona J.R. Tichinel. For a living, I do a lot of freelance writing for websites and stuff, but the thing I do under the name Fiona J.R. Tichinel is mostly YA, sci-fi, and horror novels. And you know me as Fiona Carter. I am married to Matt Carter, who's also been on the show a bunch to, you know, establish canon for those listening to this reality. Okay, that's me. Am I introducing the movie as well, or am I introducing...
No, I'll do it. I'll do the movie. All right. And it's been proven between you and Matt, you're the better of the two hosts, correct?
I don't think that's been determined at all.
Okay. I like giving Fiona a hard time. She's on the show again all the time. She's a personal friend of mine. So yeah. So One Cut of the Dead. I will give you a little bit of an honor here. How would you describe this movie to someone who has never seen it before, that is walking in completely blind?
Okay. The first thing I would tell someone walking in completely blind is that you absolutely have to watch past the first 40 minutes. Because it does this incredibly audacious thing of putting this pretty bad movie up front, and then there's a twist, and then you understand everything about what's going on, and it's amazing. But if I'm going to be more thorough than that and not so coy, I'd say it's a movie about making a movie about making a movie. And as you noted, this isn't really a horror movie because only the inner two movies are horror movies. The outer movie is just a movie about making a movie, and it's such a love letter to the process of making collaborative art, and that's what's really great about it.
Yeah, this is one of those movies I just love. I mean, I'll tell you how I stumbled upon it. I'm curious how you stumbled onto it, but I always am searching websites for like most underrated horror movies and stuff, and Shudder, that's one of the, if people don't know, that's a channel on Amazon Prime. Shudder has, it's all horror movies, and I always am searching lists for like, what's the best horror movie on Shudder? And this one always comes up. And in fact, this one, I believe to this day, still has 100% Rotten Tomatoes score, which I don't know I've ever seen another movie with 100%.
I don't watch those scores closely. Mostly Matt scouts out movies and will report back to me on those, but I believe that's correct, that this has 100%. And yes, we found it the same way on Shudder. I think it was when Shudder did its free trial during quarantine, we watched this one for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a movie you kind of have to stumble onto. And that's one of the reasons I tend to have a rule on staff picks. A movie's got to be 10 years old before I cover it. This movie obviously is only 6 years old, but there are certain movies you make an exception for. And this little movie that was, did you see the budget? Is it like $25,000 budget movie?
I would believe that. What I'd heard was that it was done as part of an acting class. I don't know if that's, I think that's true, but they managed to make a financially successful, like wildly relative to its budget, movie in just an acting class where this teacher had a vision, apparently, and it went amazingly.
Yeah, but I'm telling you guys, you have to see this movie. I don't care if you're not a horror fan. You just have to see this movie once, and then you will instantly rewind it and watch it again. Rewind it. I'm using an old VHS term, of course.
Well, they still call it a rewind button on everything digital.
Okay, good. Yeah, so rewind it and watch it again. But yeah, I'm just telling you, there are certain movies I feel so strongly about on staff picks. And this one, oh my God, there's... Can you think of any movie that's anything even remotely like this one?
I have heard that it's very similar to... Oh, crap, I forget the name. It's a movie that I haven't seen. I've never seen a movie that's anything like this. I want to say Ghost in a Box or something. But for me, no, I don't know any like this.
Okay, yeah, I read it's based on a play called Ghost in a Box, but I think there is a movie called Noises Off, or a stage play, that I think this is also very similar to this.
So I just know this one, and I know it's, it is one of my favorite movies. It's not the first one I would think of when you ask me what is my favorite movie, but when I'm having an absolutely terrible day and need to cheer up, this is the absolute number one movie that I will go to above any others. This is the most reliable pick-me-up I know of movies.
This is what I love about the Carters. Their pick-me-up movies are zombie movies.
Our other pick-me-up movie is Silence of the Lambs, but this one's more reliable.
Oh. Yeah, okay, so I'm going to give a disclaimer, and I don't always give this for movies. If you don't want spoilers, stop this episode right now. Just stop and go find One Cut of the Dead, which I believe it has a different title in Japan. Isn't it like Don't Stop Rolling or Don't Stop the Cameras or something?
Yeah, Don't Stop the Camera, I think.
Okay. But I'm just telling you, this movie pays off as well as any movie I have ever seen if you just stick with it. But there's a twist and there's a little asterisk, and I have to mention this, Fiona. I love this movie just about as much as you do, but I'm not entirely sure I would call it a great movie. And that's because it's the first 37 minutes are hard to get through. And I really think it's a chore for people to get through. So I don't know if necessarily I would say this is a great piece of art, like it's perfect, but I just love how much it pays off if you stick with it.
Yeah, it really does. And again, I just find it dazzlingly bold that they decided to put those first 40 minutes first. As a writer, I would never do that. I would never lead with this and assume people are going to get to the end of it and understand what I'm doing. But they did it, and it's just great.
All right, so now we've officially baffled the people who haven't watched this movie yet. So we're going to explain what we're talking about in a second. But the structure of this movie is just messed up. It's just wrong. That's all I can say about it. It leads off. In fact, did you read, have you read some of the professional critics that wrote about this movie when it first came out?
No, I haven't.
There's a couple of them that walked out.
That would not surprise me if you don't wait to find out what's going on.
Yeah, they waited about 20 minutes and they're like, this is the worst shit I've ever seen. And they left.
You have to wait longer than 20 minutes.
Okay, so this is a very low budget Japanese film. It's, as Fiona said, part of a film school project, starring a bunch of actors that weren't very well known. And I swear to God, the first 40 minutes, 37 to 40 minutes, are about the most amateurish pieces of crap you are ever going to see. I mean, I think that's fairly accurate in way of describing it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you have to get through the first 35 to 40 minutes, and then all of a sudden the movie's going to do a turn a switch on you, and you're going to be like, oh, now I see why it was so bad. And then the entire rest of the movie explains that, to the point that I believe really only the second and third parts of the movie are that important, to be honest.
Well, they're the real story, but so much of the joy comes from what they explain about the first third.
Yeah, this is going to be a tough one. I'm just warning you guys right now. This is a very hard movie to try to explain to people. In fact, it's kind of a backwards movie. That's kind of how I was writing it in my notes today. Okay, are you ready to dive into this one, Fiona?
I'm ready.
Okay, so open this one up for us. How does our movie One Cut of the Dead open? What low budget filmmaking nightmare are they going to foist onto the audience here?
Oh my God. Okay. So the first shot, we open up on this zombie lumbering toward this blood-soaked woman, and she has an axe, but she's begging him to wake up and refusing to believe she's in a zombie movie, basically. And eventually he gets there and he bites her and she says, "I love you," and she lets him, and it's all very, very melodramatic. And then someone yells, "Cut."
And of course the film quality is terrible, the lighting is terrible, the sound is terrible. You're like, what home movie am I watching? What is this?
Yeah, it's not prepossessing. And then someone yells cut, but this isn't even close to the actual explanation yet.
Yeah, so someone yells cut, the zombie has eaten the girl. I am not well versed in the names of the Japanese actors or characters in this movie. I will do my best, and I will explain to people there's two versions of this movie, the one that's been dubbed into English and the one that's in Japanese with English subtitles. So depending on which version you watch, you may get different names.
Yeah, I watched the subtitle version and I made myself a little cheat sheet here of names because they go by really fast if you don't speak the language, and so I apologize profusely if I mispronounce anything. But I think I at least have all of the parts matched to the right names here.
Okay, so I'll lean on you a little bit here. Who are our three characters here at the start? There's the boy, the girl, and the director. What are their names?
Okay, the director, I've just called him director in most of my notes, but his name is Takayuki Higurashi.
All right.
And then there is the girl, Chinatsu, and the boy, Ko. And then we're about to meet the makeup artist whose name is Nao.
Okay. Remember, there will be a quiz on all of this for all my listeners at the end.
And all of these are going to change halfway through, and you have to learn them again, just so you know. People wonder if I'm joking right now.
Yeah, you're not joking. She's not joking. This is three movies in one. Get ready for it. All right. So we have the zombie attack at the start. Ko attacks this girl, Chinatsu. He bites her in the throat, and then someone says cut, and we pull back, and we see that there's a crew in this old abandoned water facility, some kind of filtration facility, and they're making a movie. And if I recall, the director is not pleased with this last take.
Yeah, he just throws a director hissy fit and he yells at the lead actress and calls her performance fake. He calls her fake. He says that he wants real emotion and he's thoroughly confusing and unhelpful about how he wants this to happen and just makes an ass of himself and makes her cry. And the zombie guy tries to step in and help and he hits him and yells at him, and then a makeup artist steps in and tries to defend the guy and just yells for everyone to take a break, and the director just storms out.
Yeah, well, so what we learn here is the director of this movie is an asshole. He's very mean to his lead actress, which I actually read was a little homage to The Shining, to Stanley Kubrick.
But there are so many movies this could be an homage to, honestly, in that respect. It's way, way too common, but that's kind of the point here.
Yeah, so there's these four characters. Basically, the director storms off. The lead actor and actress are kind of talking, like, why? How come we can't get this movie right? Why are our takes wrong? We learn they've done 42 takes on this one scene. And the boy and the girl are kind of distraught, the main actors. And they're consoled by Mrs. Now, who is the makeup artist. And so basically, God, how do I describe this? Okay, so what's going to happen? What this is, it's a zombie movie being made. but it's in the zombie movie is about people making a movie about zombies who are going to be attacked by zombies. So that's where we're about to get to in a couple seconds here.
Right. So they've filmed a scene about zombie attacking this girl, and then suddenly something pounds on the door outside.
Yeah, so they're upstairs in this water filtration, these three actors, and they're just talking, just kind of chit-chatting. And I think the pounding on the door, does that come before or after Mrs. Now explains that there's a urban legend about this place?
She starts out by telling the urban legend, and in the middle of it, there's the pounding, and it's eerie timing, like, oh, we were in this campfire mood, and ooh, there's stuff going off outside. And then there's this really long, awkward pause.
Okay, we have to talk about this a little bit. So the thing with this movie, and I'm not going to spoil it, I will do my best not to spoil it, is that we're watching this movie. It's the most low-budget movie ever. There's all these awkward pauses where the actors don't know what they're doing, and it's just so amateurish. And this is the first one. These three actors are kind of sitting in a building, and there's a pounding on the door, and they look over at the door, and they just hold the look. And if you don't know what's going on, you're like, what the hell is this movie?
I was... at this point, I really had... If it had not come so highly recommended, I probably would have stopped.
Yeah. Honestly, it was the same for us. I was watching it with my wife and daughter a couple years ago, and I'd read every review says, get through the first 30 minutes and you'll love the movie. So this is the part I'm like, all right, this I have a little faith here. I trust the 100% Rotten Tomatoes score.
Yeah. But at this point, they're talking about hobbies, and the makeup artist is showing them the self-defense breaking out hold where she yells pum, and it has nothing to do with any of the zombie stuff, and it just seems like someone's just doing stream of consciousness at the keyboard.
Yeah, there's literally about 7 minutes of dead air in this scene where the actors are sitting there and they have no idea what to talk about. They're just like small talk, like what is mm-hmm. this? And again, there will be a payoff for this later. Stick with it. And they're talking. I think Mrs. Now says, yeah, this place was used back in World War II by the Japanese. They did experiments. They raised the dead here. So there's a setup. This is supposed to be a zombie movie, but it's like the zombie attack hasn't happened yet. They're kind of waiting for it, but it hasn't happened yet. And finally, after this big, long, awkward silence, like Fiona said, there's the pounding on the door. And I think this is where we get the first zombie attack outside, right?
Yeah, one of the stagehands steps out for a cigarette and someone comes up to him and he thinks, oh, you're just in makeup because we're making a zombie movie. And then the zombie vomits all over his face and bites him. And next thing we know, we're focusing back on Now and Ko and Chinatsu, and the stagehand's arm gets thrown on the floor in front of them.
Yeah, so here we go with the zombie attack. So what we're meant to believe, the movie that's being made here, I'll kind of give this away because I think this would help us describe it, that the director is making a zombie movie in this water filtration plant that has a sordid past, and the director has learned that there are ways to actually summon the dead here. And if he summons the dead, he will get a more believable performance out of his actress. He's mad that they're not giving him a real performance. So that's kind of the gist of the story, that the director has gone up on the roof, he has summoned the dead, and all of a sudden these zombies appear outside and they start attacking.
Yeah, he's done this blood ritual up there to so that he can film real zombies, real emotion.
Yeah, so a zombie attack starts, and it's just not well done. That's the only way I can describe it. It looks very amateurish.
Yeah, they fight the zombies and push them outside a few times. It's clearly very low budget. They don't have the ability to do a lot of things. There's a guy with a pretty fake looking hacked off arm, the arm that got thrown in for them. And then in the middle of it, one of the characters, a sound tech, I think, for the movie that they're making, tries to wander outside, and they have this another awkward conversation about, I don't think you should go out there. I think they're like monsters or something.
There's one point, my favorite part. Okay. Like we're kind of describing this. It's very hard to do without giving away the movie.
It is. Yeah.
But there's all this chaos of these zombies attacking these people inside. At one point, the sound guy in the movie tries to leave. The director says, where are you going? And then the director literally looks at the camera and says, don't stop rolling, and then runs outside, which is one of my favorite moments in this.
Yes, and it's weird and fourth wall breaking because the person carrying the camera that we're looking through hasn't been a character so far. So now we're trying to figure out if there's an extra person here in this zombie attack, and they never speak, and it's not really all that clear. But I think when he yells that, don't turn off the camera or whatever he says, that's him delivering the Japanese title of the movie.
Ah, there you go. Yeah. Okay, and here we get another dead air spot. And again, I'm kind of yada yadaing over this because the second and third part of this movie is way more important than the first, but we have to kind of talk about it. There's a scene where the director runs outside and he leaves the three main actors inside, and there's just this awkward silence. And so they start saying the same lines over and over. Did you notice that? Are you okay? Yeah,
Which
I'm okay.
one?
Yeah, it's
Oh,
where,
yeah.
yeah, Kako says, "Are you okay?" And Chinatsu says, "Yeah, I'm okay." And then he says, and then the lady says, "Are you okay?" And she's like, "He just asked me that." Like they just start repeating lines because it's like they don't know what to say. Yeah, so anyway, all this chaos, and how is this going to culminate? Do they run outside eventually into the zombie attack and into the van? Is that what happens here?
Yeah, they run out into the van and they realize, of course, we don't have keys to the van. The keys are on one of the zombies. So Chinatsu has to run outside and fight one of them to get his bag. And while she's doing this, the camera we're watching from gets dropped on the ground at this diagonal kind of Sam Raimi-esque angle for a while. We're just watching their feet while they're fighting. And she gets the bag, but she can't get back to the van. So she runs off in another direction and someone picks up the camera and chases after her while she's running from the zombies. I guess trying to find a different way back.
Yeah, I have to point out in the first 15 minutes of the movie, we've had two moments of dead air between all the actors where they just look at each other. We've had the director screaming at the camera to stop, to keep filming. We've had the camera dropped on the ground for a good minute and a half during the movie. And then we've had blood splattered on the camera and somebody has to wipe it off. So this is
Yeah.
just everything has gone wrong. And again, you're watching this movie for the first time. And like I said, this is where some critics may have walked out on this movie. And that will be your instinct too. You will not be impressed whatsoever, I'm telling you.
Don't do it. Stay.
Stay, yes, have faith. Have faith in your favorite staff picks host here.
Oh, we also have to mention that throughout all of this, Now has been getting increasingly intense and scary.
Yeah, describe who she is to people because they might not know the names. Who's now?
Now is the makeup artist who was previously propping the younger actors up. But now she's getting really intense about we got to kill the zombies and survival, and she's getting kind of scary. And when they ask about it, I'm dead calm. And Matt pointed out that this might be a reference to Dawn of the Dead because it's very reminiscent of Roger when he goes out on his reckless zombie killing maniac spree that ends up getting him bitten with this whole perfect baby perfect thing. It's a similar vibe, but if you were just seeing this homage within the movie that we're watching right now, it would not look like a well done one still.
Yeah, so just to paint a little picture for people, what Fiona's talking about is the very mild-mannered makeup lady, Mrs. Now. She's the third character in the movie. She goes batshit insane at a certain point during the filming and starts screaming the F word and just swinging the axe and killing everybody. And there's like a fun montage of her running outside, kicking a bunch of zombies. She decides to start chasing our lead actress with an axe. Everything's going wrong. It's chaos. It's berserk. And we're going to all end up, I believe, up on the roof here for the finale.
Yeah, she's convinced at this point that Chinatsu is infected because there's a suspicious looking cut on her foot after she fought one of the zombies. And so she chases her up onto the roof, and Ko is trying to stop her, but she's fighting him off with her palm self-defense thing. And at one point when she grabs him, she's trying to break his arm, he motions to the camera to turn the other way, and it focuses on Chinatsu, who just stands there and screams for, I timed it. It was a full 40 seconds. We just focus on her face screaming while we hear this struggle in the background, which doesn't sound like a lot in the abstract, but at the time it just feels like they're going to wear her voice out to infinity.
Yeah. Okay, I'm really going to skip past this next part because I feel we're confusing people because this is so we're giving all these minute details that are hard to describe. Let's just say it's a badly done zombie movie. Nobody knows what they're doing. They're frantically trying to fill dead air a lot of the time. Everyone is just screaming. The camera isn't pointed at the right person half the time. The film quality is bad. We end up on the top. We get these really fake-looking special effects. We get off-camera kills. Again, it's just your instinct once again will be to walk out. This is not a good movie. And we're going to finish, I believe, with the girl, Chinatsu, ends up, what did she kill? Kills the director on the roof at the very end?
Yeah, first she kills her boyfriend, Ko. He turns into a zombie, and we get a repeat of the opening scene where she's supposed to say, I love you, and let him kill her, but instead she says, I love you, and she chops his head off, and the director gets really pissed at this and yells at her for going off script, and is somehow surprised when she then starts chasing him with the axe, and she hunts him down, and she chops him to pieces, and she's screaming and crying, and it's very Sally Hardesty and over the top. And then she just sort of wanders off haunted and finds the site of the blood ritual that he did with this big bloody pentagram on the ground and just stares up the camera, which very slowly, jerkily rises up into the air to get a clear shot of the whole thing. And then the credits roll. And this is at the 1/3 point of the movie.
Yeah, exactly. We are 1/3 of the way. This is only a 90-minute movie. We are 1/3 of the way into the movie. The first 37 minutes, I have timed this, and it's been well documented. The first 37 minutes of this movie are the most ridiculous home movie-looking amateurish zombie movie you have ever seen. And again, your inclination is to say this is dumb. My inclination at the time was to say, why is this a comedy? Everybody says this is a horror comedy. How is this a comedy?
And then you start wondering, oh, is it getting really good reviews for being like a so bad it's good type comedy, like yeah. The Room? But no, that's not what it is at all. Oh, we should also probably mention that everything that's happened up to this point has been one long take.
Yes. Very important to the movie. Yeah.
Hence the name, the one cut of the dead. And it's just been one camera, one take this whole time. And then the credits roll. And then suddenly we get our first cut and this title card says 1 month ago.
Yes. Okay. Here we go. We have gotten through the hard part of the movie. That was the hard part. Now yes. This becomes a real movie. Now it's literally like a 48-minute movie. That's going to describe what we just saw. Here's the puzzle box nature of this movie. So yeah, so we finish the zombie movie. It cuts to credits. It says one cut of the dead. And I know some people just left here. They're like, I guess that's the end of the movie. They didn't realize it keeps going. Yeah, like Fiona said, now it says 1 month earlier. So here comes the real story. So the plot of One Cut of the Dead is thus, and I will leave it to you, Fiona, to describe it. What exactly was this experiment that these people have been thrown together to try to do?
Okay, it turns out that this was a TV movie, a 30-minute TV movie done in one take live. And we start out this... the real movie after we've been subjected to that movie that they made. We're picking up with the director who played the director, the crazy director in the movie we just saw. And we find him, he's just this completely mellow, normal guy who's, you know, directing karaoke movies and little things like that, who gets approached by these producers about this project.
Okay. So I want to mention a couple things at this point in the movie. Again, just forget everything that's happened up to this point. This is the start of the movie. What I'm very impressed with in this movie, Fiona, there's about 48 minutes of movie left. There's going to be about 12 story arcs, and they will all pay off by the end of 48 minutes.
Yes. From this point on, not a single second of anything is wasted. It all has purpose and it's great.
Yeah, it's unbelievable how quick this movie moves and how well they pay off all the stories. There's not a loose end to be found. And it's like the storyline has setup, payoff, setup, payoff, setup, payoff. I mean, it's unbelievable how well they do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so to describe this for people, yeah, Mr. Higurashi, he's the director. He will be the guy directing this movie. He is known for, I think his quote is...
fast, cheap, but average.
Yeah. Fast, cheap, but average.
Which, you know, is not a bad deal when people aren't looking for great, because normally the joke is, you know, you can have it fast, cheap, or good, pick two. He gives you 2.5. That's his thing.
That's good. Good. Yeah. So Mr. Higurashi, a very competent director, not really known for giving you art, but he can get stuff done. And he's being hired by this TV network. And if I recall, they are putting together something in Japan called the Zombie Channel. And they have a special project here. They want to do something to kick off their new TV channel. And it's going to be a 30-minute zombie movie, one long take, all done live on TV. And they want Mr. Higurashi just because he's known for getting stuff done quickly.
Uh-huh. And he looks at them and repeats all this back to them like they're going to realize how crazy it sounds when he says it. But no, they're totally serious and they want this to happen. For anyone keeping track, we're now watching a movie about making a movie about making a movie. We've gotten to the outside of the puzzle box now.
We're three layers into the Russian nesting doll.
Yeah.
Okay, before we go too far, I got to talk about this producer lady who hires Mr. Higurashi. Yeah, so, all right. So there's a lady in this movie, and I don't want to be mean. I'm trying to be very nice.
Yeah.
She has an odd face. She's the producer.
She's this enthusiastic old lady producer who looks exactly like what her character would look like in a comic book. Like brought to life in an uncanny valley kind of way. She looks like if there were a Japanese live action version of The Incredibles, she would be Edna Mode. She's that much of a big character kind of look.
Yeah, she's like the head of programming at this TV network, the Zombie Channel, and she's the one hiring Mr. Higurashi. And she's about 4'10", and she's got this huge face and this big smile and these little tiny beady eyes. And every time they cut to her, it's like jarring. I'm like, yeah, like it's just like you said, she looks like a comic book. I cannot believe a human being looks like that.
Yeah, there she is. And she's real. And it reminds you every time, oh, wow, that's not extrapolated from a comic book. That's what comic books are extrapolated from, I guess.
Yes. So anyway, yeah, so this is the whole TV network's deal that they want to do this zombie movie and they want to do it live in one take. And again, if you remember, like what Fiona said about the movie we saw at the start, that was one take. So you're kind of putting the pieces together in your head. Oh, we're going to see how they made that movie. So it's kind of backwards. That's how I described it earlier.
Yeah.
Okay, so with that, we cut to Mr. Higurashi goes home. He's been hired to do the zombie movie, even though he tells them, there's no way I can do 30 minutes in one take with one camera. They're like, oh, sure you can. It won't be that hard. So he takes the job because really they have nobody else to do it.
And because he doesn't know how to say no, which is what his wife teases him about when he gets home. His wife, who we will recognize as the actress who plays Now in the movie. And she's sitting there watching her self-defense videos with the palm hold breaker thing. And they have a teenage daughter who runs through whose name is Mal, not to be confused with Now. The wife's name, I'm going to go back and check. The wife's real name is Harumi.
Which I will never use in this podcast. She's Mal, or she's Now to me. Okay, so let's talk about the family. Let's talk about this family dynamic, because this is very important. Even though this is ostensibly a zombie movie, it's really not. It's actually a really touching story of family dynamics and a father and daughter, which it'll sneak up and hit you at the end. So talk about the dynamics of this family.
Okay, so he's talking with his wife about this insane project he's going to be doing. His daughter runs through on her way to work, and his wife asks, could you go follow her? Just weird, but he does, and turns out mom's worries are justified. When he finds her, his daughter, Mao, is working as an assistant director, and she's trying to get this little girl to cry on screen instead of using eye drops. And she's trying to coach her and relate to her a little bit, but she's being kind of scary for the kid's age and then ends up insulting the kid's mom and she gets herself fired. And her dad talks to the boss for a minute and boss is saying, oh, in terms of work, she's great. It's her personality that's the problem. And so he tries to go to his daughter and basically encourage her to be more like him, the easygoing director that he is. And she throws the eye drops at him and she storms off. And so it's really clear at this point that these two, they have the same passion in life, but they're polar opposite kinds of directors. He's not very artistic, but he's really easygoing. He's easy to work with. And she's really passionate about the art, but she's terrible with people. And there's this huge rift between them at this point where they each think the other one should be them, basically.
Yeah, this is very important to the movie, so pay attention to this part. So this dynamic of the family, the father, a very laid-back director, Mr. Higurashi, his wife is a stay-at-home, you kind of gets the sense, a bored housewife.
Trying all these various hobbies, but her life's kind of empty right now, and she's just sort of a spectator to her husband and daughter at the moment.
Yeah, she's just kind of bored. She picks up hobbies, yeah, watches self-defense videos. She really has nothing going on right now. She's kind of in between passions. But the daughter is very important because the daughter is very rebellious, very headstrong, much like her father, a director, but the exact, like Fiona said, the exact opposite. She's very detail-oriented, very, you know, hard driven, very kind of she has a bad attitude, but she's very passionate about creating art and getting the details just right. And this will have a very good payoff later in the movie. So just remember that.
Yeah. And we also get at this point, that, she has a big crush. The daughter, Mao, has a big crush on this, heartthrob actor, Kazuaki. I have that written down here, who plays Ko. And, her mother mentions that to the dad, and it's kind of confusing here because this happens during an interview where the actor is announcing he's going to be blood soaked in his next role, but the director seems to get the idea from this moment to cast him in the movie to kind of get his daughter's interest in it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if the actor was jumping the gun in announcing this, thinking, being overconfident about getting the part, but anyway, the director casts him. Daughter has a big crush on this actor.
Yeah. Okay, very big plot point, yeah. The main star of this movie, the guy who plays Ko, the male zombie, big shot Japanese actor, and the director's daughter has a huge crush on him. And again, every single thing in this movie will pay off later, so enjoy. All right, so with that, let's go to the first day of rehearsals. We're going to go to the TV studio where they start rehearsing this movie, One Cut of the Dead, which again, the movie we saw in the first 37 minutes. And we have a big table read here where we meet all the actors. And I'm not even going to try most of these names. I'll just kind of summarize them for people. So the girl, Chinatsu, in the movie, the star, she is like a Japanese idol, like a pop star.
Yeah, her name is Aika. And she has this completely different personality from Chinatsu. She's very bubbly and, as is going to become an issue, pretty fake coming across. And she's talking about all the things that her agency won't let her do, like getting vomit in her hair. But it's pretty clear that she just doesn't want to, and has this very fake, that's great thing she does whenever she gets her way. And then there's Kazuaki, who it turns out in person is, he's also completely in person, which is great. All the actors in here who are playing actors in the movie, get to play multiple characters here and really show off their skills. But he's this very pompous artiste who hyperanalyzes everything and says, this movie is subtly about racism. And I don't know, maybe someone from Japan can pick up on some coded social commentary in this that I can't, but I'm pretty sure he's just supposed to be wrong because someone else says, where does it do that? And he just sort of blows him off.
Yeah, he's just a pretentious douche, basically.
Yeah.
So we have the lead actor. The lead actress is a pop star who says, I'm here to challenge myself. I want to do new things. So she's not really a trained actor. We got the main guy, Kazuaki, who's this young heartthrob, kind of douchey male lead actor. These are going to be our stars. And now we go around the room and we meet the rest of the cast and crew. And gosh, I'm going to be bad with these names. Should I say names or should I just say what they are? Like, I could say there's the director of photography who's drunk. There's the assistant director.
Who's what he is?
He's the drunk, the DOP, yeah. They call him the DOP, director of photography.
Okay. And yeah, he's clearly an alcoholic. He's taking sips to stop the shakes. And then there's the guy who seems like a diva who's complaining about the quality of the bottled water. I think he's the sound technician.
Yep. The assistant director is the nerdy glasses guy.
Okay, nerdy glasses guy. And then there are different actors in the roles for now and the director within the movie. So we know that can't go well because we know who ends up ultimately playing these parts. But for now, there are different people reading from it.
Yeah. Okay. So without bogging down too much in the details, we have an entire intrepid crew who's going to produce this movie. And we start going through rehearsals. And like the first table read is awful. It's all awkward. The main actress, one of the main actresses has a baby. It's screaming through the whole rehearsal. So right off the bat, the director's getting a little frustrated. He's like, this doesn't sound very good. This crew doesn't look very strong so far.
Yeah, and I think it's probably shaping up to be close to his average that he's used to. Maybe not because this is a really chaotic situation, but I think he's especially disappointed because there's this moment when his daughter throws the eye drops at him earlier and he looks at it. And it's like he's looking at this bottle of all the artistic compromise he's made throughout his life, mm-hmm. how far he's come from when he was probably more like her and more idealistic about the art itself. And I think he already has kind of high hopes for this to be something more than what he's used to. And it's not working out so far.
So right off the bat, this one cut of the dead movie is not going well. The rehearsals don't go well. The actors don't mesh or jibe very well. Everyone's got demands. His crew, he's got a drunk. He's got a guy who's prone to diarrhea. Like, it's not going well. Although, again, the second part of the movie, I always forget, is very short. It's only about 20 minutes long at most. And so we get a little montage, right, of them just practicing. And so slowly by slowly, we see them start to make shape how this movie's going to go. We see them blocking shots out. We see how they're going to do stuff. So it does start to get a little better. Although I want to mention one scene here, the camera operator and his assistant, the young girl, they're probably very important here to talk about.
Yes, the cameraman who's going to be doing this has a bad back, and his assistant / apprentice understudy, I'm not sure what her title would be, is really, really hoping to get to do something in this movie. And she has these cheesy ideas about zooming vigorously and he's just not having any of it, but we're already getting foreshadowed of, things are probably not going to go very well for him. Also we have to mention, the alcoholic, Oh, we should do this at the end because it involves a smash cut to a different section. Are we ready for this?
Well, I want to talk about a little more setup before we get to the final stuff at the end here. So, yeah, there's the director of photography who's a drunk who's going to – it's not going to go well relying on him. Just get ready for that. But there's a very important scene here kind of in the middle part of the movie where we're back at home, back at the director's house, and this is the scene between the mother and the daughter. And I know you want to talk about this one because this is where we learn about the mother's backstory, why she is a stay-at-home mom now.
Right. Okay. So the daughter's kind of worried about her mom always being bored. And she's asking, what are you doing lately? And she's gone through a whole bunch of hobbies, apparently, lots of different kinds of dancing. And she's now doing the self-defense thing. And daughter saying, well, what about acting, which apparently her mother has done in the past? She says, no, I devote myself too much to that. And Mao says that that's not bad. Lots of actors do that. And Harumi, her mom, kind of to close the subject and distract from this, she just says, oh, hey, you know, Kazuaki's in your dad's new movie. And that successfully diverts her, but sets up what Harumi's backstory is and what she's going through right now.
Yes. So Harumi, the director's wife, former actress, probably a pretty good actress, but we learn it was taking over her life. What happens when she starts acting is she gets so into the role that it kind of takes over her life and she's not fun to be around. So that's why she's retired from acting. So just file that away because that will have a wonderful payoff later in the movie.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we have all the seeds in play for this movie to start. We have the cast that's not really meshing. We have the crew that is, there's all sorts of problems with the crew. We have the mother, the director's wife, who shouldn't be acting and just stays at home, even though she just reads the scripts all day long. All she does is read the scripts. So she knows this movie inside and out, even though she's not in it. And now we have a very pivotal scene in the movie where it's like, the day before or 2 days before they're going to start filming this movie. And this is where the director is sitting with the director of photography, and they're talking about daughters. And this is the most important scene in the movie, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll accept that. The alcoholic is telling him that he's decided to stay sober until the end of this shoot. And he's got this picture of his daughter in his script to help him stay strong. And he tells a story about how when he got to meet his daughter, he was so nervous, he got so drunk that he didn't show up. And he tells this like it's the funniest story ever. And the director's going along with that for a while. But then just suddenly on a dime, he shifts and he breaks down crying. And it's awkward for a moment. And the director's trying to comfort him. But then we smash cut to the doc. Did I say doctor? The director. We smash cut to him crying and drinking alone in the dark at home, looking at pictures of his daughter, of Mao, when she was a little girl. And there's this heartbreakingly adorable shot of her sitting on his shoulders as a kid playing with a video camera.
Yeah, so this is very pivotal in the movie, that the director of the movie, Mr. Higurashi, is not close with his daughter. And he breaks down here. There's a whole little subplot that this other guy, the drunk guy, is not close with his daughter. And Mr. Higurashi is not close with his daughter. So we have a very sobering scene of the director crying at home, just, you know, lamenting the fact that his family dynamic has broken down the way that it has, that his daughter does not like him, does not respect him. She's a filmmaker too, but she doesn't like the films he makes. She doesn't like anything he does. And he's just crying there, and he's holding, and this is very important, as Fiona pointed out earlier, he's holding a picture of his daughter when she's little on his shoulders. And it's like maybe the last happy moment they ever had together. And that will be very poignant to one of the greatest payoffs I've ever seen in a movie later on.
I will agree to that, yeah.
Okay, so I think with that, we are already up to the last part of the movie, the third part of the movie, which is the actual filming of One Cut of the Dead. We've been setting it up. We've been setting the stage. And now comes, and this whole last 35 minutes of the movie is just so wonderful. This is where it all comes together, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's the day. It's shooting day. It's opening night if you're an ex-theater person like me, and there's magic in the air, and there's all this anticipation, and we see everyone setting up and practicing with the crane for a crane shot, and this is it. This is make or break. We have one shot at this.
And the director, I believe, gives him a little pep talk. He's like, all right, we're here at the location. We're filming today. We've spent a month rehearsing. And he says, remember, whatever happens, the cameras keep rolling. Do not stop. He's like, don't worry about minor mistakes. We'll just go through them, but everything should be fine. And that's not what's going to happen, is it?
No. Mistakes will start immediately. But there's one little moment here that I want to point out before he gets to this speech. His wife and a producer who's on site with them for the shoot are talking because his wife has brought Mao, his daughter, to the set to watch this. And they're talking about this, and the producer is saying, oh, how sweet it is that she looks up to her dad and wants to be a director like him and came to watch him at work. And while he's saying this, Mao is trying to look behind her dad to see Kazuaki better. So that's what Higurashi was hoping this would be, but so far it's not. That's not what she's here for at this moment.
Okay. I will just give one or two sentences here to describe what we're going to talk about in the next 15, 20 minutes. So they're going to start filming the zombie movie. Every single thing is going to go wrong. This is going to be the absolute clusterfuck of all clusterfucks, this filming. And they're just going to improvise the whole thing. So if you flash back to the start of the movie where you're watching the world's worst zombie movie, that's why. Because everything's going wrong, and now we're going to watch that entire movie over again, but just from the production side, which is such a cool little twist here.
Yes. I love it so much. And from the beginning, okay, we got all of these setups of everything that's going to go wrong. One of the producers sent some fancy sake as a gift, and the director says to hide it because we know what's going to happen with that. And the guy was complaining about the water, grabs the wrong bottle and freaks out. And we find out that the actors who were supposed to play Now and the director have been in a car accident because they were in the same car because they were having an affair. She's married with a baby, and it's very sordid, but kind of on the sidelines. So neither of them can make it to the shoot. So what are we going to do? Everything's already falling apart.
Yeah, so what happens here is we lost one of our actors. On the way to the shoot, he gets in a car accident. He's supposed to play the director in the movie. So Mr. Higurashi, the actual director, is also going to act in the movie as the director. Even though he has not rehearsed this, he's not a professional actor. He's like, I'll just step in because no one else can. And then the other thing that's fun about this is, like we said earlier, Mr. Higurashi's wife, the housewife, is a former actress, but she's not supposed to act anymore because she used to get into a role too much. But they need someone to step in and play Mrs. Now, the makeup artist. And so the mom doesn't want to do it. She's like, this is a bad idea. I shouldn't act. But the daughter makes her...
Oh, she wants to do it. She really, really wants to do it. You can see it on her face, but she knows she shouldn't. She keeps on saying, no, she shouldn't. But yes, her daughter volunteers her for it, and then she's in.
Yeah, so the mom is now in. So Mr. Higurashi's in the production, and his wife is in the production as Mrs. Now, who is arguably the biggest character. She has to do most of the exposition. And they're like, why is she in the movie? She's just a housewife. And she's like, well, I've read the script 100 times, because that's all she does at home. And they're like, okay, well, I guess you're in the movie. So now we have a cast that has not rehearsed. We have a director of photography who's dead drunk. We have a sound guy who's about to get the shits because he drank the wrong water bottle, and they're just about to start this movie, and everything is going to collapse very quickly.
And Kazuaki, being the asshole that he is, says we should cancel the show for the sake of art. This can't possibly be good. And the director has to take him aside, and I don't know if Japanese acting culture doesn't have an equivalent of "this show must go on," because that's what you'd say to this actor here, but... If they do have it, he didn't get the memo. And director instead says, oh, I don't have to tell you this, but this is your show. You're the star. And that's what gets him to continue on with this and stay.
And in Kazuaki's defense, it's not very good. So he was actually kind of correct.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's true.
Okay. So here we go. I'm almost at the end of my notes, just because this is a very complicated movie and I'm kind of skipping over some stuff. But We are now going to redo. This is like Back to the Future 2, where they go back and do the Enchantment Over the Sea dance just from a different angle.
Yeah, that's actually a really good comparison point for this.
Yeah, so we're going to watch the entire first third of the movie again, just from the production side. And I have so many little comments. This is so well done. And again, it's just the type of movie you're going to love when you first see it. So I will kind of leave it to you. What are some highlights you have as they go through and things start going wrong and the actors have to start improvising?
Okay, well, first thing out, when the director does the first scene, the very first scene that we saw, he's already going off script, and he's yelling at Aika and Kazuaki for being fake and constantly complaining about every little thing, and everyone's really impressed with his acting ability, but he's just letting off the steam from having to do this whole thing, but he does it in a way more responsible way than his character. That contrast has to be noted. And then we get to that really awkward scene about chit-chatting about hobbies and stuff. It happens because the alcoholic is passed out and they have to carry him over and hold him out of frame and just... hold him up, and when he vomits on the other guy, it's because he's actually that drunk.
Okay, yeah, so what she's talking about is the three main actors, this Mrs. Now and the two young kids, are inside the water filtration plant, and there's a part in the movie about 5 minutes in where there's supposed to be a bang on the door, and there's supposed to be a zombie there, but there's not. What's happened is their director of photography, who's supposed to be the first zombie, is drunk. He's passed out on the lawn. So what has happened is someone has kicked the door to do the bang, and they all look over there, and there's nothing there.
There's a cue card there. There's a cue card saying there's a problem. Keep improvising. And of course, Kazuaki's terrible at improvising because he's that guy who's always stuck in his head, which is what I was when I was an actor. So I empathize with this part, but he just does this awful, do you have any... hobbies?
Yeah, this is so fantastic. Again, it totally explains why the first part of the movie is so bad, because the actors all look over towards the camera, and when we saw it from a film, they're looking at nothing. But when you see it from the production side, they're looking at a cue card that just says, stall, stall, there's a problem. So they just start talking about hobbies, and the girl says, that's a random question. And then Mrs. Now says, well, I've been watching self-defense videos is what she literally has been doing at home. And they just literally start talking about her self-defense video, which makes no, there's no purpose for this in the movie. They're just literally stalling because the director told them to.
Yeah. And it ends up serving a purpose because she ends up going crazy and using self-defense stuff that she wasn't supposed to use in the movie, but this was not in the script.
Yeah. So there's, everything's going to start to go wrong here. We have people having diarrhea. We have a drunk guy. We have props that are not in place where they should be. We have three actors who are not very good, who are trying their best to improvise and adjust to this. And I think it's all going to start turning into chaos here when they run outside. This is where, if I believe, they run outside for the first time and there's a fight. And this is where the cameraman gets knocked over, where Chinuatsu runs into him. And this is where we get that shot from the first part of the movie where the camera is just lying on the ground for like a minute and a half and nothing happens.
Because she's the cameraman is having a back spasm and can't get up. And always skip past the guy who's having to be made up while he's shitting in the bushes, because presumably his character had a bigger part to play, but now he can't do that, so they just have to bring him in quickly for a zombie cameo later on. But yeah, when the camera falls, guy's having a back spasm, assistant has to pick it up and chase Chinatsu down the tunnel with it, and so she gets to do her cheesy zooms and falls down a couple times, which explains how erratic the camera work was earlier.
Yeah, we literally switch camera operators midway through the movie, which is one of the fun things. You'll notice the style of the movie changes halfway through, and that's because you see here in the last part, oh, it's because the first guy had back spasms, they had to switch camera operators. Okay, there's another scene here I got to point out where everything's going wrong, and at one point, this is the director. He's like, his sound guy has the shits. He's running outside, and the director literally points to the camera and says, "Don't stop rolling, or don't stop shooting. Just keep rolling." So when we saw that in the movie, it didn't make sense. You see it now, you totally see it make sense. He's telling people, "Don't give up on this. I will save this movie. Stop. Don't stop shooting."
Yes, and the people off screen who are watching this behind the scenes have the same reaction we did at first. Who is he talking to? Yeah. Because this is not a character, we know now. This is just a camera in the movie that they're making.
Yes. So there's all this chaos going on. The movie's going badly. And we go back to the production room. There's a little production booth. And there's this network head, this one guy. And he's like, "Nah, this movie isn't going very well. Should we pull the plug?" And he's considering doing it. But the director's daughter, Mao, is in there. And she keeps saying, "No, just let him keep going. They'll be fine. Just let him keep going. They'll save this movie."
Yeah, in spite of the fact that by this point, her mom is starting to lose her mind and she starts to answer questions about, "Oh, why did your mom stop acting?" And, "Oh, she broke an actor's arm once." And then she stopped acting, she had to stop acting, and she thinks this is way too cool. Mao is just worshipping her mom being the worst kind of ultra method actor ever, who's now chasing an actress around with an axe on screen.
Yeah, I have to say that there's many setups and punchlines and jokes in this movie. This one is my favorite, that the mom, we've repeatedly been told, cannot act because she loses herself in a role. She goes off script. She goes crazy. And the mom is about to go off script here. And I didn't actually catch this until my third viewing, that she changes the entire plot of the movie because the mom starts attacking Chinatsu.
Yeah.
I actually didn't catch that. What's supposed to happen is the glasses zombie is supposed to come in and attack them, but she can't because Mrs. Now is going fucking berserk and started attacking everybody. So the mom loses herself in the role, and the entire second half of this movie is made up. It's not the script at all. They're just improvising.
Yeah, that whole zombie gauntlet they went through earlier, that wasn't planned. That was all of the actors getting together to try to subdue this one actress who's trying to kill Aika right now. And when the camera's not looking at them, all of the behind-the-scenes people are trying to do that too. And they get up onto the roof, and she's still chasing her, and that's when she starts trying to break Kazuaki's arm like she did with that other actor. And that's when he says to turn the camera. And when they're pointing at Aika / Chinatsu for that 40 seconds of screaming, the director comes up behind her and chokes her out and gets the axe away from her to save everyone's lives. That's what's happening then.
Okay, yeah. To sum up for people, so I'm just laughing, trying to think how this is not a very successful episode. This is such a hard movie to describe.
I think we're doing pretty well, all things considered.
We're doing all things considered. This is the best podcast you could possibly do about this movie because it's so complicated. Yeah, so the entire climax of the movie that we saw at the beginning of the movie, the zombie, the really bad zombie movie. So now we see why it's so chaotic at the top, where Mrs. Now is going crazy. Kazuaki's trying to get the axe from her. And it's just, we just see it all from the production side, how chaotic this is. And there's props being thrown left and right. There's heads flying. There's a fake axe. There's a real axe. There's blood splatters. And it's just hilarious to watch how much effort the director, the real director of this movie, put in to making it look like a movie within a movie. Like, it's almost indescribable. You just have to see this for yourself to see how well this movie is at portraying the chaos of a movie behind the camera.
Yeah. There's one of the jokes coming up here is one of my favorite that we kind of glossed over in the first run, but in the second one, it makes more sense that when Aika is running away from a crazy lady who's trying to kill her at the end here, she forgets to take the axe with her and she needs it for the final bit where she has to cut her boyfriend's head off. So someone has to get their legs made up, just their legs, to be a zombie and come in and show her a cue card of pick up an axe outside. And she goes and she picks up this axe and it's like, an axe, lucky me, which was just the worst plot hoop to begin with, but now it's wonderful.
Yeah, so just everything's going wrong in this movie. The wrong people are getting killed. The wrong effects are being used. And then in all the chaos, this is kind of the payoff to the movie, that the very end of this zombie movie, One Cut of the Dead, there's a crane shot. We have to have this crane up on the roof, and it has to, the very last shot of the movie is the girl Chinatsu standing inside this blood pentagram, and she's holding an axe, and the camera has to pan up away from her like kind of a Sam Raimi Evil Dead shot. And they need the crane to do this last shot. But in all the chaos of the fight on top of the roof, the crane gets broken. It shatters and it falls down off the roof. And this becomes a problem because they need that last shot to finish this movie.
And by this point, the director's really invested in this. And he's really upset about not potentially having this shot at the end. And the producer who's on site with them, he says, don't worry about it. It's no big deal. Just give us your average. That's all we really need here. And he says, no, I say it's important. And this whole conversation happens in front of Mal, his daughter. And she looks like this is the first time she's ever seen her dad get passionate about anything. And she's reevaluating everything she knows about him.
Yeah, to go back into the movie, that's the thing with the father and the daughter, that she's very detail-oriented. She has to get the art correct. Her dad doesn't care. He'll just phone it in. But she sees her dad yelling, we need that crane shot. I will not finish this movie without that crane shot. And the daughter, like you said, gets very passionate about, she sees a fight in her dad, that her dad is like her. And so the daughter gets an idea. And what is the idea the daughter gets to replace the infamous crane shot at the end?
We're going to make a human pyramid. So in this really, really long scene, we didn't even mention earlier, there's so many awkwardly long scenes in the original one. There's one where when they're redoing the opening scene with the zombie lumbering at Chinatsu, it goes on over and over again. He sort of pauses and then he lumbers toward her and pauses and lumbers again before she finally cuts his head off. That's while they're trying to get this human pyramid built. They're stalling to try to get this ready to be able to lift the camera with it. And the whole cast and crew is getting into this. Even Kazuaki volunteers to be part of this.
Yeah, this is adorable. The last 10 minutes of this movie are so achingly adorable. Like, it's almost, I'd love to say this about a zombie movie. It's practically a Disney movie. It's so cute here at the end, where everybody on this troubled production is trying to get this one last crane shot so they can finish the movie off. And they're doing a little human pyramid, and you get the drunk and the guy who has the shits, and everyone's working together. And even our douchey main actor, Ko, he runs up there and helps out. So they're all going up to the top to build this human pyramid so they can do this last crane shot.
And finally on top, we have the director and his daughter sitting on his shoulders with the camera, just like in the picture, which she then reveals that she found taped in his script, just like the alcoholic had with his daughter's picture. And that's how she got the idea to do this. And that's why we have this really jerky, but in retrospect, really triumphant shot of raising the camera over their heads.
Yeah, this is absolutely adorable. The last shot of the director on top of the human pyramid, his daughter on his shoulders, recreating their famous childhood photo, like the one time in their life they finally connected again. And this is just a wonderful end of the movie that they hold that shot, and they have to hold it for like 15 seconds. You see everybody on the crew kind of huddled together trying to get that last shot of Chinatsu with the axe. And oh my God, and it's so sweet. It's such a cool little ending for such an intricate little movie.
Yeah, it's such a high. It's great. And then we finally get that cut again at the end, and the older lady director tells them, "Oh, I was worried, but it all went well without any trouble. Thanks."
Yes, that was easy.
Definitely this joke about producers being out of touch, but it's also really sweet because it's about how when you make artwork, it looks effortless from the outside.
Yeah. So that is, in our best effort, we just described one cut of the dead to you. I will say we left out about 80% of the movie, just because I'm trying to keep it succinct and not confuse you too much with details. But I will say, okay, to sum this up, it's three movies. The first part is terrible. The second part explains why the first part is going to be terrible. And then the third part, you get to see why the first part was terrible in real time.
Yes, but in the third part, you're, instead of understanding why it's terrible, I mean, that's part of it, but you're also celebrating that they pulled it off at all. It's so cool that they actually managed to get all the way to the end. And there's technically one more extra little movie here. Over the ending credits, the final ending credits, there have been a bunch of credits. We get to see, through the eyes of a camera crew, filming the crew, filming the movie that is about filming a movie about filming a movie. Yeah, at the end, we add an extra two layers to the puzzle box with sort of a making of this movie that you just saw.
Okay, so I was reading some trivia about this movie. Now, okay, did you read a lot of trivia on the making of this or the behind the scenes?
I didn't really, no.
Okay, I read that they actually did do the first movie in one take. It took them a bunch of tries. I forget how many tries, 37 tries.
Oh, right. I think, was it 37? I think I did read this. I thought it was only six.
I don't remember specifically. There was a lot, but they got it right on the second one, and then they just kept doing it. But they actually had it done on the second take.
Wow.
And then, let's see. Yeah, so the logistics behind planning this movie, I can't even fathom how difficult it must have been, because you have to know who you're playing, when, what part of the movie you're in, which version of which character you're playing. It's like, this one just blows my mind, the thought process behind how they made this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is so tight. You would not believe that from watching the first third, but in retrospect, it is. It is so brilliantly constructed. Everything's doing what it's supposed to be, what it's supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and like we said, all the plot lines pay off at the end. All the actors are really good. And I was quite surprised when I read that most of the actors in this were novices or amateurs, or the Mrs. Now had like come out of retirement. She used to be an actress and she really did stop for many years and she kind of came back. And like, she is amazing in this movie.
It's just so uplifting because it's a really kind movie. It's, there are no villains here. Even the out of touch producers, they're only out of touch. They're not trying to be stifling or exploitative or anything. It's not one of those movies about making movies where it's like one man's quest to fulfill his vision in spite of all the naysayers who don't understand him. It's about finding and honoring artistic integrity, but balancing that with compassion and connection and collaboration with other people. And it is so compassionate to its characters. I mean, maybe a little too much sometimes, but in a charming way. It's it makes smart choices about that. It doesn't glorify like directors making actors cry, because they don't have him actually make Aika cry in that scene. She uses the eye drops in that scene where he's actually yelling at her, and then she gets to to find herself and get to the real tears in the scene where she's chopping up his dead body, and it's more about her than about him. But it's, in general, it's really patient with its characters. You've got a dangerously method actor. You've got this, the pompous actor, the assistant director with boundary issues, the director's daughter, and supposedly a shallow pop star, and the alcoholic, and the prima donna, and the producer who says TV is an art and stuff. And it's all about these people ultimately coming together and getting over themselves and doing the very best they can at this really dumb zombie movie, mm-hmm. and having so much fun with it. The only person this movie ever asks us to hate is the fictional version of the director who's sacrificing his cast and crew's lives for his vision. But there's nothing like that in the actual version of what's happening. And it's really beautiful and happy, and I love it.
Yeah, and in fact, one thing you mentioned, that he yells at the girl, Aika, at the start and makes her cry. But then if you remember when they're showing the filming of the movie at the third part of the movie, Aika even says, "Go very hard on me, you're too nice." And so when he does that...
That's true, she does say that.
Yeah, she tells him to do that.
But yeah, even in that moment, they still have her use the eye drops, and I think that was a really conscious choice to not have him actually make her cry and... like frame that as him being the best director ever because he traumatized an actress. They don't go to that place with it. Instead, she looks a little shaken in that moment. Like that brought her more into the headspace of the character than she thought she would be. But they make it a moment that is more hers when she really brings the actual tears and no longer needs the bottle.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point when you said that there's no villain in this movie, really. And that's...
No.
Very hard to do. I mean, you're a storyteller. You write books a lot more than I do. It's hard to write a story that's gripping without an antagonist.
Yeah. And this one really does it. I mean, I don't watch a ton of movies that are, you know, about like singing or dancing competitions or things like that, where the conflict comes from... Even then, it would be from people's conflicting ambition. And there isn't even really that kind of conflict here. There's nobody who would benefit from this movie failing. Everyone wants it to be good, but it's not easy bringing all of these people together with their own particular issues to do this perfectly in one take live. This was an insane thing they took on in the first place. And that's where the conflict really comes from. But even that wouldn't be as deep and important as it actually ends up being if we didn't have this being about father and daughter connecting again, and the relationships that this repairs beyond just making this piece of art.
Yeah, and I just want to go back to something I said earlier, that every storyline in this movie has a payoff, which is astounding when it's a less than an hour movie, really. But yeah, so the father, Mr. Higurashi, wants to create art, wants to get this project done, wants to impress his daughter, wants to have a relationship with his daughter. All those things he pulls off in this movie. The wife, his wife, wants to be an actress again, just loves, wants to have her family to be together again, to be close again. All those things happen at the end of the movie.
Well, I'm not sure she's going to get to be an actor again after this particular movie. It didn't go so well on that front.
Yeah, she did kick the shit out of a couple of crew members, but otherwise. But she got to be an actress again. She got to live out her dream again. The daughter wants to be a director. She wants to, you know, create something with perfect art and vision and you know, intricacy. And she does that. And she respects her father at the end. The network wants to pull off this live, ambitious, unbelievably impossible project. And they do. Like, every single person succeeds in this movie. And the kid, Kazuaki. Yeah, he wants to create art and be taken seriously as an actor, and he does. He has to improvise in this and challenge himself.
He does, and in the end he's lying in the pile of people from the human pyramid, and he is smiling and he is in the moment and happy for the first time we've seen him in the whole movie.
Yeah. And then Aika, I forgot Aika. She goes into this movie. She's a pop star. She wants to be an actress. She's like, I want to challenge myself. I want to be taken seriously. And at the end of the movie, she's dripping in blood. She's fantastic.
She's the best one in it. And she goes to places she never thought she could and really, really gets into it. I feel really bad for not focusing more on her in this talk, honestly, because that actress is amazing at all the different layers of this character that she plays.
Yeah, I was going to say, I couldn't decide who's the better actor in this movie, either Mrs. Now or her, because those two are both unbelievable, and they both play like four different variants of the same character, and you buy every one of them. Again, it's one of these movies that's really hard to describe. I defy anyone to watch this movie and then try to describe it to someone. Fiona and I, we may have struggled a little. We did our best, and there's never going to be a coherent podcast on this movie just because it's impossible. The structure does not allow for it. But at the end of the day, like Fiona said, it's a happy, feel-good, pick-me-up movie, which is unbelievable to say about a zombie movie, but it really is. And she said, "You, when you want to be cheered up in life, you watch One Cut of the Dead, and it always brings a smile to your face."
Yeah, every time it works for me. And there's that really perky music that they have every time something goes right in the main story after the beginning. And I just associate that with happiness now.
Yeah, I don't know how a zombie movie could be described as cute, but somehow this one does it.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, technically, again, the main movie is not a zombie movie. It's a movie about making a zombie movie about a zombie movie. But, yeah, cute is definitely not the only word for it. That diminishes the number of things it does well, but it's absolutely a word for it.
Yeah, it's cute is one word. It's brilliant. It's really intricate and well done. It's well planned. In fact, when you read a lot of the reviews, the professional reviewers are always amazed at the way the director of this movie reverse engineers some of his best gags. So it's funny just to see, you see the gag first, and then you see how they did it later, and it's still funny when you see it reverse engineered. And they're like, I don't know how he did that.
Yes, the bit with Aika/Chinatsu chopping up the director, we get to see it from a different angle in the second time around, and we see the stagehand who's sitting there with a piece of tubing and a bucket full of blood blowing spurts of blood onto her face each time she supposedly wrenches the axe out of his head. That's another thing I really love about this movie is it's not just about the director or even just the director and the actors. It has a bunch of moments of showing the people behind the scenes that you wouldn't normally think about saving the day as well. And how many people put so much work into making this thing we see on the screen.
Yeah, there are so many scenes in this movie of makeup people applying makeup to actors who are shitting or puking or running or passed out and just throwing the actor up and flinging him into a door so it gives a zombie effect. It's so impressive. It's like a choreography, this whole last part of this movie. But anyway, that's One Cut of the Dead, the only kawaii-style zombie movie, which, if you know, you're Japanese, that means cute. It's a very adorable movie, but it's more than that, and I really hope you guys go and check it out. Again, not even for horror fans. This isn't even a horror movie. It won't gross you out. It won't horrify you or anything. It's just fun and lighthearted, and you'll admire it. And like I said at the start, you will instantly want to watch it again because the second time is where you pick up most of the best jokes.
Yeah. You will instantly want to watch it again once you get to the end. Just not in that first 40 minutes, maybe. But again, it's really cheesy kind of gore. So even if you're squeamish, it doesn't look real enough that it would probably have an issue.
I also love the fact, just a fun little trivia fact, that the opening credits to this movie are like 50 minutes into the movie.
Yes. Yeah. After we get the end credits for the fake movie, we get opening credits for the real movie. And you don't even have to do that with a movie, really. They do it like opening credits to a sitcom, but at a one-third point in this movie that's a one-off. It's an interesting choice, and I love it. It's charming.
So once again, it's a movie I've never seen anything even remotely like this. It's one I cannot imagine anybody disliking, even people who like don't watch R-rated movies. This is barely an R-rated movie. It's, again, high recommendations for just about anybody, and I think that's all I really have left to say about it.
Agreed. Yeah, watch it and watch past the first 40 minutes.
Yes. When the movie looks like it's ending, it's not really ending. Don't leave. Don't turn it off.
Don't leave.
Okay, well, we did it, Fiona. That was a...
We did it!
we did it. I told Fiona before this podcast that this is either going to be a 1 hour podcast or a 3 hour podcast. There's nothing in the middle.
And we got it in good time.
We did. Although now we have to start over and we have to show it from a different angle, just like the movie. So now we're going to redo the whole podcast and we'll show video of the two of us talking in our studios.
Yeah. So then you'll be watching a video about watching a podcast about a movie, about making a movie, about making a movie, possibly about making a movie.
That's true. And hopefully no one has diarrhea. Always a plus. All right. Before we head off, anything you want to plug, Fiona? Any projects you're working on if people want to know where they can find you?
I don't really have anything new right now, but if you want to check out another podcast with me on it, I did The Shadow Storytellers with Matt Carter for a couple of seasons, and we did a bunch of sort of Tales from the Crypt-like short stories on that. So that's fun.
Excellent. Yeah, I heard those are really good. So people check those out. Those are like ghost stories, right?
Ghost stories, other kind of spooky, self-contained, scary short stories. Yeah.
Once again, I want to thank everybody for listening. This is Mario Lanza. This is Staff Picks. If you need to reach me, you can reach me at staffpickspodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter @MarioJLanza. And until next time, I'll be out there searching for more movies that deserve more love, and I'll try to find somebody interesting to come on and talk about them. I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.